Rikia, and welcome to Tuck Talks. I hosted the Toronto Unschooling Conference from 2006 to 2011, and I'm thrilled to share with you the amazing talks given during its six-year run. I thank the speakers for so generously sharing their unschooling insights and experiences. And if you'd like to learn more about unschooling, you can check out my website at livingjoyfully.ca. There you'll find lots of resources, including my free book, Exploring Unschooling. And now, please enjoy this Tuck 2006 talk, Unschooling Passions, presented by me, Pam Larikia.
All right, I think we're ready to get started again. Did I even formally introduce myself at the beginning of the day? I'm Pam Larikia. You've heard a lot about trust today from the speakers, and we were talking about it on the email list before last week it came up, because that is a key component, and it's something that as speakers we're really happy and excited to share our experience with unschooling and what we got out of this trust and all the really fun and exciting places that it's taken us. So we're all very happy to share, and I'm really grateful for the speakers for taking the time to do that today. And I'm going to continue along the same vein in just a little bit different focus. So for the next hour, I want to talk to you about passions, about delving deep into passions with your children. Does your child have a passionate interest, a world that he would be thrilled to explore every moment of his waking hours? Does it worry you that he wants to focus so intently on one thing? Do you worry that maybe he's limiting his world? At first glance, it kind of seems logical. Unschooling is about learning through life. So how can they do that if all they want to do is, well, fill in the blank with whatever their passionate interest is? The world is out there and you want your child to explore it. But while you're busy trying to convince your child to try new things, you might just be missing another exciting way to explore the world through their interest. Learning is about making connections, connecting new information to something that you already know, and building your own view of the universe. It really helps to recognize that the best learning is really a byproduct of living because there is a real reason for learning it. Learning new facts and skills is really more of a side effect, bits and pieces of information that they need to know along the way to accomplishing something that they're interested in. So whatever they're interested in the moment will be the basis for the best learning for them, not to mention the most fun and interesting. I have two children who have discovered passionate interests. What I want to share with you today is the many interesting and often surprising directions that a passion can take. I want to help you feel comfortable spending your time delving deeply into a passion with your child, instead of spending that time trying to convince them to try other things. I want to show you that exploring a passion is not about closing off the world, but about opening it up. My eldest son, Joseph, is 14, and he's passionate about video games. Though even that is still too broad a category. He is, more correctly, passionate about one type of video game, RPGs, or role-playing games. This passion developed quite early, when he was around 7 years old, and he's embraced it completely since we began unschooling when he was 8. When I saw how much joy these games brought to his life, I decided early on to give him the freedom to embrace his passion, and I chose to be deeply involved with him. Unschooling is not about leaving him to find his way, but about being his partner, about helping him in his quest. I wanted to understand the joy that he felt. When he needed information about a game, we researched. When he asked me, I read the guide to him. When he asked for space, I gave it to him. When he was looking for a new game, we searched. When he called me to come see the boss battle that he was engaging, I excitedly went. When he offered me to try it, I gave it a shot, and I wasn't very good. When he was deeply engaged, I brought him drinks or snacks or dinner. I learned about video games alongside him. I soon realized that it wasn't just video games that he was learning about. There were so many different things that he was learning. I began to see the many directions that his learning was taking, and I realized how big the world really is, even through the filter of role-playing games. We encountered reading constantly. Many games, especially RPGs, have a rich story environment. If your child isn't reading fluently yet, you can read the text for them so that as they play, they can enjoy and appreciate the storyline, not just the action. And reading is not only found in the games themselves. We found ourselves reading game guides and walkthroughs and reviews, ordering a subscription to a gaming magazine, keeping all our issues just in case we had to look something up later, searching online for walkthroughs and finding message boards. And eventually, Joseph discovered fan fiction online, stories written by fans that are about the game world and the characters. They certainly fueled the imagination. In looking for all this information, he has honed his research skills. Finding and evaluating information sources were key skills that he developed when searching for that one bit of information he needed to help him get past that puzzle or to beat his current boss. When he was younger, Joseph would ask us to help him find the information that he needed. Sometimes he'd be at our shoulder helping us search. Other times he'd be playing his game and we'd bring over whatever information we found. After a while, his experience and comfort level grew, and he took on a lot of the research himself. And he quickly discovered that when searching the internet, spelling counts. Now he finds game fan sites as well and evaluates their reliability based on his current knowledge of the game. These skills developed naturally because he wanted information to help accomplish something in his game, but they are applicable to any research that he may want to do in the future, how to find sources and evaluate their content. This level of detailed research soon led to writing. Once he was comfortable on the gaming message boards, if he couldn't find the answer to his question, he posted it. And later, he began to answer the questions of others. This is real writing, meaningful communication with an immediate purpose. And because he wanted to get his point across, it was very important to him to write clearly and concisely with reasonable punctuation and spelling so that the reader could understand him. And he would get almost immediate feedback to his writing as others would comment on his suggestions or they would ask further questions to clarify. He also learned how to figure out the tone of the messages. And it was a very useful feedback loop, and his writing has improved immensely. Typing is another skill that Joseph picked up through his interest in video games, as Anne was talking about. He's never been interested in writing by hand, nor in the typical learn-to-type software that we picked up for him to try. But when he expressed an interest in online gaming, we set him up and got him a keyboard, and within 2 weeks he was typing well. I remember him telling me at the time that he was surprised at how fast he could type already. He told me that when he was in school, they would go to the computer room once a week, and the teacher would have them practice with the typing software. He said that whenever she would walk by, he and his friends would put the game on demo mode and pretend to be typing, and she would be all impressed with their skill. But now, with a real reason to learn it, it was nowhere near as difficult as he thought it was. How about math? There is lots of math, even in just the basic gameplay. There's often a time component and some form of money or a bartering system. These are typical variables that the player has to deal with to progress through the game. And being able to read the map is important. Sometimes all you have is a compass to get your bearings and to point you in the right direction. There's also monitoring your character's health and their level, anticipating damage, your experience points, and figuring out your chances of surviving upcoming battles and leveling up. Not to mention all the money conversations you'll have as you bargain hunt for used games, look for new games, or place bids on eBay auctions. You become very good eBay sellers, buyers mostly. Numerical concepts are everywhere in video games. There's also a lot of logic in gameplay. Many side quests in the games require logic puzzles to be solved to get useful items or even to just continue on to the next level. There's lots of logic in the approach to boss battles, determining weak areas and choosing attacks that take full advantage. There are often mazes to be solved as you move through the levels. If you love logic puzzles, you should try out a Zumbini's game someday. Even algebra rears its head. For example, one evening when he was 11, Joseph asked me to help him figure out the formula they use to determine the max level an offspring Digimon can achieve when two Digimon DNA digivolve. It was an algebraic formula. Let's see if you can follow me with it. With two variables, the levels of each of the Digimon parents. So if X is the lowest parent's level and Y is the highest parent's level, the formula to calculate the max level of their offspring is Y divided by 5 plus X. This is an aspect of the game he's just getting around to this time. We discussed the formula and went through the examples that they gave. I mentioned that with division by 5, there was often a remainder, and that in their examples, they were rounding down. And that, boy, with that formula, it would take a while to build up to a high Digimon level. He said he was trying to get parents together to get an offspring with a max level of at least 21, but so far it wasn't happening. After about half an hour, I passed him in the hall, and he said, yeah, they sure do build up their level slowly. You just know he had been pondering the formula and trying out various combinations for the past half hour. And RPGs are full of data. I've seen pages and pages of percentage charts in the player's guides and the walkthroughs that talk about the parameter increases and decreases of the statistical attributes for various character classes. By using these charts, a player can build up skill in the classes and parameters that they prefer, thus making their own unique characters and ensuring a well-balanced party. I've seen Joseph poring over them in deep concentration. In fact, when he was studying the charts for one game, he remarked that they were the most important part of the player's guide. The rest he didn't really need, although the art was very pretty. These charts had six attributes that changed individually based on, from what I could tell, three independent variables for, on average, five possible subclasses. And there were 25 of these charts, one for each of the six default classes, plus various combinations of classes to create complex classes. That's a lot of data to understand, manage, and organize. There's also a large artistic element to video games as well. The newer systems have the ability to use very high-quality graphics and music. Gone are the two-dimensional, 16-color, square little characters and the beeps and whistles of the older games. Now we often have full orchestration with music developed specifically for the game and its mood. Game music soundtracks are more popular than ever. And full-color 3D character animations with changing expressions and detailed backgrounds, including rippling waters and moving clouds that cast shadows. Many games are just beautiful to look at and listen to. Joseph and I had lots of conversations about graphics and music. I picked up Joseph a good sketchbook and a set of drawing pencils, and he's created some really beautiful character sketches. He has looked at fan art on various websites and has a good feel for what he likes and what he doesn't. As for music, he will often call me to come and listen to his favorite music from certain scenes or levels, and we'll talk about what he likes about it. The game designers understand the integral role of music and often allow the player to choose their favorite background music, or to have a place, they have a place like a jukebox where you can go and choose which particular track you want to have playing. One day I came downstairs and Joseph had figured out how to get the video from one system and the audio input from another system so he could listen to his favorite game music while playing another game. It was very inventive. There is so much going on in video games that you can discuss. It's like critiquing a book or a movie. We've had many of these discussions. Discussions about the game's storyline and the plot. Discussions about characters and how they develop during the game. How the music helps build the mood and the suspense. What's the climax of the game, and how is everything resolved, or is it? Joseph has told me that what he loves the most about video games is a really deep story. Games without deep stories make him bored fast. For him, these games are just another level of immersion into a story. Books allow you to read a great story and to imagine it. Movies take it another step and bring in the visual element. Video games take it yet another step and allow you to interact with the story. In many games, how you interact with it actually determines the twists and turns that the plot will take. So the replay value is amazing because you can play the game multiple times, oftentimes through the eyes of different characters and learning different bits of story along the way. Through our discussions, he has come to realize that his passion is not really video games per se, but video games as a medium to immersion in a great, deep story. If I had limited his playing time and not been supportive, I don't think he would have realized this, and I would have been too busy trying to get him to do other things to see it myself. Now I realize it would have been like me limiting the time he was allowed to read each day. Seems a little ridiculous when you think about it that way. Introduced through gaming, Joseph has developed a great interest in mythology. For example, the Age of Mythology game is a wonderful, detailed PC game along with its expansion pack, The Titans. And all the details of the game were painstakingly developed from Bullfinch's mythology. In fact, the collector's edition that we gave to Joseph for Christmas a couple years ago included the Bullfinch's mythology book itself, a CD with the game music, and a DVD entitled The Making of the Age of Mythology. Talk about a learning power pack. I have a quick story about how his interest in mythology has made many other connections. A couple of summers ago, my mom and I were camping with my kids and nieces, and I brought along the Magical Worlds of Harry Potter book. I had just picked it up, and I knew they all liked Harry Potter, so I thought they might find it interesting. After dinner one night, I brought it out and started reading excerpts. The book is set up in question and answer format. Well, the mythology that Joseph knew and related to what we were reading was phenomenal. He would often finish the sentence that I was reading, and he would connect it back to some of the games he was playing, and he would connect the games to each other. Even though the games themselves weren't related, they were all drawing on the same myths as their basis, or as the meaningful basis for naming the characters or the moves and so on. He was so excited that he kept explaining stuff to everyone. We were all enjoying ourselves so much that we brought the book into the tent with us and continued reading it until everyone had fallen asleep. It was a really fun night. Languages are another area of interest that's been sparked by RPGs. In one RPG series he has enjoyed, the developers created a new language just for the game. As Joseph explored this language, he learned about what makes up a language, the structure required, the types of words, and so on. He printed out a guide on how to translate between English and Albed, as well as a pronunciation guide, and spent a lot of time on that. This is a great way to study the basics of a language itself. In his eagerness to learn about new games, Joseph began perusing Japanese websites. And in searching for more information about a game he played and loved, he found out that it was part of a series, most of whose games had not made it to the North American market. So this coincided last year with his urge to become more professional in his gaming, and he decided to order his first Japanese language video game. He loved the experience and decided to order another. Fast forward to a couple months ago, and I was unpacking the last of the boxes in his room. Yes, I know, we moved almost a year ago, but we eventually got to them. And he saw the Japanese language learning CDs that we had picked up when he first expressed an interest in learning Japanese. At the time, we installed one on the computer, and he used it once or twice and put it aside. The other one isn't even open yet. He commented on how it was interesting that he had been learning the language, but not through the educational programs. I laughed and mentioned that's why we unschool, because we often learn better just by doing. He's been learning Japanese by playing Japanese video games, and he noted that he has 10 of them now. By immersing himself in the language through the game voice acting, the story text, the many, many, many menus, by reading game translations, by watching subtitled Japanese anime, by finding some cool Japanese language websites, lots of ways that don't look like sitting down and learning something as daunting as another language. Yet again, instead of formal learning in preparation for doing, he just started doing. It never ceases to amaze me how well that works. Joseph has also learned so much about himself and what makes him tick through his passionate exploration of RPGs. When he was looking to expand his social network, one thing that worked well for us was supporting his desire to get involved in online gaming. The wonderful thing is that it's a community of gamers with relatively comparable levels of interest and skill in video games, which he can't find at his house any longer. A couple weeks after he first went online to play, we asked if he was enjoying it, and he said it was like a dream come true. He has had his ups and downs, but is learning lots about dealing with others, the social chit-chat that goes on, and how he can comfortably fit in with that environment. He's also learned over the years how to deal with frustration. Games don't always go as planned. Some quests and battles are harder than anticipated. Learning how to manage himself without explosions of frustration and anger has come with experience. So has his self-confidence grown. Having successfully completed many games, he knows now that it often takes patience and perseverance. He realizes that he can overcome just about any obstacle he encounters through research and by just giving it another try. Sometimes he knows to take a break, maybe for 15 minutes or maybe for 3 months. He's done both. But what it has done for his self-confidence is it's made him realize that he can analyze a problem, research possible solutions, come up with a plan and a backup plan or two, and give them a try, whether or not the problem is video game related. He's also learned a lot using cheat codes. Your first reaction may be, what a waste, where's the challenge? But look a bit further. When you think of how most games are designed, you realize there are a number of variables that the player has to keep track of, like health or current location on the map and your weapons and enemy type and weaknesses. The player needs to be on top of all these things to successfully navigate the game. What a cheat often does is basically fix one of these variables so that the player no longer needs to worry about it. He can concentrate on mastering the others. For example, a cheat may give you infinite health. Now they can concentrate on, say, learning their way around the level using the map, or practicing battles with their weaker weapons to improve their skills. And they learn that sometimes fixing one variable can have unexpected effects. For example, in The Simpsons Hit and Run, some tasks require you to chase another vehicle and to hit it repeatedly until it's destroyed. There's a cheat that destroys a car in one hit. That sounds good, doesn't it? Cool, that should save some time. So he applies it, and all goes well until the next task. It requires him to chase a vehicle and repeatedly bump it to knock off items and collect them. But on the first bump, it's destroyed. Oops, can't do that. What a great way to learn about variables, logic, and unexpected consequences. It's a great way to approach any problem that they're presented with in life. To think outside the box, explore the range of possible solutions, they can apply the same logic that they learned using cheats to improve their game skill. What are the variables that I have to work with? Can I fix or set any of them? What effect does each variable have on the problem? Are there any unexpected consequences that I can envisage where these variables might be linked? Other cheats bring the object-oriented code to life. For example, in another game, there are cheats so that you can change the color of the main character's tunic and his size. Simple and meaningless, you say. Just play around with it. But no. They will likely notice that his tunic color has changed even in the intro to the game, not just the game itself. How that little bit or byte of data has changed and is accessed constantly throughout the game. How when they enlarge him so that he's bigger than the gate or even larger than the building, he still cannot enter it when it's locked. How it hardly even looks like he's moving when he steps, because he already takes up most of the screen, but the code for walking still moves him the same short distance. And in The Simpsons Hit and Run, there's a cheat so that the car will bounce. What on earth for, you think? But playing around with it, you discover something very interesting. When you bounce high over the houses near the edge of the level, you can see the other side. And there's nothing there. You have reached the end of the code. The designers never imagined that a user would be able to see past the houses, so they didn't bother adding anything behind them. It's just empty space, and it's really cool looking empty space. These cheats almost make the code visible and come alive before your eyes. They begin to understand how the code works, how each game object is independent of the others. They may not be able to explain it, but they intuitively understand it. And if, in the course of their lives, it comes up, they'll understand the technical terms immediately because they have seen it in action. It will connect to their gaming experience and have meaning. Joseph has also developed an interest in game design. We have picked up several versions of RPG Maker now, and he spent many hours with it. It's not for the faint of heart, though. The guide reads like a computer manual. You have to create the world map, the events and their placements, script controls and logic for every event, the characters, the enemies, the visual effects, and all the character and battle stats, and much more. He's more than once commented on how you have to code for every little thing, how game development is a lot more detailed than he had imagined. He recently figured out how to create cutscenes, basically short movies that advance the plot or further develop a character. He's learning more and more programming as he tries to get his games to do more complicated things. There are a couple of articles about learning through video games that I'd like to share briefly. In High Score Education, Games Not School Are Teaching Kids to Think, James Paul Gee, a reading professor in the School of Education at the University of Wisconsin-Madison, now that's long, asserts that learning isn't about memorizing isolated facts. It's about connecting and manipulating them. He explains that a good game skirts the edge of the player's level of competence, each new level pushing them to the limit of what they can do and enticing them to do more. They are immersed in the game world and experience the flow of all their attention being powerfully focused, their mind working quickly, making the connections needed to meet the game's challenges. After spending many hours with his students immersed in video games, Gee concluded that young gamers today aren't training to be gun-toting carjackers. They're learning how to learn. The second article, Does Easy Do It? Children, Games, and Learning, is by Seymour Paper, author of The Connected Family, Bridging the Digital Generation Gap, and a founding faculty member of the MIT Media Lab. He recognizes that talking about games and learning is an important activity and encourages parents to engage in conversations with their kids about learning. Well, that comes naturally for unschooling families. And in his rebuttal to a comment sent in regarding his article, he says that the most important skill that I see children getting from these games are those that support the empowering sense of taking charge of their own learning. This is a basic premise of unschooling. I am always amazed when I look at the different places that Joseph's passionate interest in video games has taken him, the many things that he's learned along the way, some directly through playing, things like reading, math, research, problem-solving skills, and others where his interest in gaming has expanded into many diverse areas: writing, art, music, mythology, Japanese language and culture, programming, social skills. His world is not small. It is big and wondrous. So did that help a little bit? Are you getting a little more comfortable with the idea that delving deep into a passion may not be as restrictive as you imagine? Or you may be thinking, I wish my child loved video games that much. He's only interested in whatever. Well, let's try another one. My daughter Alyssa is 12, and over the past few years, she's been passionate about Harry Potter. Let me tell you where it has taken her. It was a big part of her road to reading. It all started when she was almost 7 and she left school. Although up to that point, she had read the basic early readers they sent home without much complaint, she did not want to pick up a book once she got home. She could often be heard to declare, "I can't read," and nothing I said would convince her otherwise. I told her that if she was interested in reading a book herself, she could just ask me any word she came across that she didn't know yet, and I'd tell her. "No thanks," was her reply. Her older brother had been given the first Harry Potter book a few months back, so I started reading it to the kids. Everyone enjoyed the story immensely, and we soon worked our way through all 4 books that were available at the time, and numerous times, eagerly anticipating the release of Book 5, Harry Potter and the Order of the Phoenix, and powering through that together in 3 days. Eventually, the boys had had their fill, and coincidentally, that summer, we found the Harry Potter books on CD at the library, so she would cozy up in her room and listen to them regularly. Sometimes I would bring her food or tea, and she'd smile and say thanks and continue listening. September came, and after listening to all 5 books a number of times, she started writing down things that were interesting to her. Umbridge's speech, the prophecy, the Sphinx's riddle, listing the names of the centaurs, clues that she found that matched up with other books. I noticed her notebook filling up, and one night when I was out, I picked up a new one that I thought she would like. She really appreciated that and said she'd use it for her good copies because sometimes she was writing so fast it was hard for her to read. This writing led her to looking up things in the book, since at times she couldn't quite figure out the words from the CDs. She took all 5 books up to her room and placed them beside her CD player so that she had very quick access to them. Not long after that, she mentioned that she was sometimes following along in the book while listening. I thought that was cool. Then, one afternoon, a few days later, she came down from her room to show me that she had read the first 2 chapters of Philosopher's Stone, and she was very surprised that the words weren't nearly as hard as she remembered. I'm thinking that's from when she was looking at the books when I was reading. And she pointed out that many of the words in the Harry Potter books are harder to read since they're made-up words that she doesn't see anywhere else. Cool. The next morning, she spent in bed, and she made it reading, and she made it to chapter 4. She was very pleased with herself. For the next few days, she read in bed every morning and at various times during the day and night. One night, she brought her heating blanket into the backyard to the swing, ran the extension cord, brought out her pillows and a flashlight, and settled in to read, and 5 minutes later, it started to rain. But she was so excited, she brought the book everywhere and was constantly saying, "I want to read," and trying to find a quiet place. Throughout that October, she was still going full steam ahead on her reading and her writing. She was immersing herself in words. It hadn't taken her long to finish reading Philosopher's Stone, and soon she started Chamber of Secrets. But after a few chapters, she said it was pretty boring because she knew it all. She said that at least while she's listening to the audiobooks, she gets to do other things. And boy, does she do other things. Let's see if I can list some of them. She was sewing costumes for her stuffed animals, sewing pillows for sale, creating wire jewelry using beads she'd found, and designing and creating her own clasps, repairing couch pillows, pajamas, and Christmas stockings. Her interest in props, in one particular case, the house scarves, led her to learning to knit. She spent a number of fun hours with her great-grandmother, the most accomplished knitter in our family, over various visits. and a couple of months ago she showed me. She also moved on to more writing. She marked all her favorite places in the books and wrote out many of the signs, letters, songs that she could find in the storyline. Sometimes she wrote them by hand, sometimes she typed them, more playing with words. In November, she pulled back out that Magical Worlds of Harry Potter book, and for the next few days she read that regularly, gently stepping beyond the Harry Potter books themselves to one that would likely have the same vocabulary she was already comfortable with and feeding her passion at the same time. Now and then, she read passages aloud to me, and at other times she would explain to me what she had read. Then, a couple weeks later, she was reading all her email from her conference friends. That reminds me of the story Anne shared. Up until that point, she has always asked me to read them to her. Then, she took a Nancy Drew book from our library at home and started reading it. She was definitely now getting more comfortable with her reading and expanding beyond her initial Harry Potter zone. We started exploring the internet world of Harry Potter and found quite a few interesting fan sites to read. We discussed theories in depth, analyzed the plot, and all those small clues that J.K. leaves behind. Talk about character development. Is Snape really evil? One day, Joseph mentioned fan fiction to her, and she pulled her first all-nighter reading Harry Potter-based fan fiction. Nowadays, reading just flows through her everyday life naturally. She has many books, websites, and magazines. Collecting books is a great interest of hers. Wandering through a bookstore is definitely her idea of fun. So did you notice how many different areas came up, even as I was just describing her Harry Potter reading journey? Connections everywhere. Let's look at computers. As I mentioned, we first started surfing Harry Potter fan sites. Here again, research skills came up. Which sites were the most accurate? She's a great judge for evaluating a site's content because she knows those books backwards and forwards. Which web search tools worked the best? Soon, she was searching on her own. Not long after that, she decided to develop her own fan site. I gave her a quick tour of front page and she was off. With something concrete to dig into, she learned a lot about web page development, and her wireless wizarding network site was great with at least half a dozen pages. Remember those conference email friends I mentioned briefly? She met them through a Harry Potter fun shop, and they put together a skit for the talent show, which led her to taking a drama class the following year. Recently, many in that group started creating their own pages on MySpace, and Alyssa really enjoys personalizing hers. She's learned lots of HTML, the basic web language. And seeing the many different animated icons that people were posting on their pages led her to learning more about graphics and me showing her the photo editing software that I had. Not long after that, she was giving me tips about using it. One night, I brought up the software I had for creating animated GIF files and just left it open for her before I went to bed. By the next morning, she had already figured out how to use it and had created a number of moving icons. She is deep in this interest right now and has uploaded dozens of them to share and is now finding them on other people's sites. That's cool. And remember when I mentioned her reading bits and pieces of the Magical Worlds of Harry Potter book? Well, that sparked an interest in mythology and mythical creatures, and she perused a number of books from the library as well as some of the books that we have on the subject. She delved into Egyptian mythology, Greek mythology, and dabbled in Joseph's favorite, Norse mythology. Reading the book also sparked a deep and continuing interest in names.
Hi.
Many of the names that J.K. Rowling uses in Harry Potter have mythical connections to their character's personality, and a number of those connections were described in the book. I remember the day she first asked about names, and I quickly found the one baby name book that I had picked up when I was pregnant with Joseph. Since then, she has collected many name books, and they are most usually found on the end table in the family room, right by her usual spot on the couch, where she can quickly reference them. They are very well used. She much prefers the books with pronunciation guides and full descriptions of the history of the name, not just line-by-line listings of names. She has a number of notebooks full of her favorite names, and she is the person we most often go to when we're searching for a name for our new town or character. We'll describe the personality traits or the overall theme that we're looking for, and she'll come up with any number of related names for us to choose from. She thought it was interesting when we read on J.K. Rowling's website that she too has a deep interest in names, starting back when she was a child, and she kept notebooks full of her favorites. That would explain her characters, why her characters' names are so interesting to investigate. Now let's look at fan fiction in more depth. I mentioned it as an area of reading interest that she discovered through her brother. After reading for a few weeks, she got comfortable enough and began posting comments to authors. She figured out how to set herself up to receive emails whenever one of her favorite authors would post a new chapter. Eventually, she decided to try her hand at writing. I know at least one of her stories reached the 30,000 word mark, because I was there when she did a word count. She learned a lot about critiquing writing, what she liked, what she didn't like. This sparked an interest in grammar and spelling as she explored the whole process of writing, with many notebooks strewn around her room containing character and story synopses and plot outlines. Her interest in names was fed as she searched for the perfect name for her characters. And not the least of the skills she developed around this time was typing. She is now a very proficient typist. Her Harry Potter fan fiction interest has also spread into another interesting direction. One author in particular that she enjoyed reading would post an excerpt of song lyrics at the beginning of the chapter that in somehow related to the plot or characters. This was the beginning of a deep and ongoing interest in music. Soon Alyssa was searching out those particular songs to hear them in their entirety, and it was a very eclectic mix. Then she went through our music collection, finding quite a few of the songs that she knew. Then she began exploring more current artists, because I didn't have them, and came across her most favorite band at the moment, Simple Plan, and I promised her I'd mention it. This is tied in with her group. You're welcome. This has tied in with her growing interest in computer graphics, and many of her newest icons, animated GIFs, and backgrounds have a Simple Plan theme. In fact, my computer is currently sporting a stunning background she developed based on their song Perfect. Through them, she's learned more about the music scene and lots of behind-the-scenes information about putting together albums, the ins and outs of touring. And she also told me to add that through them, she's learned more about guitars, hockey, anger management, self-respect, and confidence. And bass. We have enjoyed their songs together and have discussed many of their song topics, which often explore the powerlessness of youth. I have pointed out to her that often they sing about precisely the reasons why we have chosen not to treat our children the way that society typically advocates. Coincidentally, just last weekend, Alyssa's older cousin contacted her through Instant Messenger. She had been given a school assignment to pick two songs and explain how they reflect society's values, and she wanted Alyssa's advice on which song she should choose and why. From her last few visits to our house, she knows that Alyssa's very into music at the moment. She took Alyssa's advice, they found the lyrics that they were looking for on the internet, and discussed what she could write. My niece also told me, as I was in and out of the conversation, that she had tricked her teacher, saying that she was choosing songs from the bands Reset and Simple Plan, laughing that he didn't know that they were basically the same band. Most members of Reset had moved on to Simple Plan. Later that afternoon, I thought about it and was yet again thankful that Alyssa has the freedom and time to think about and discuss the meaning behind the lyrics of many songs and is not forced to just pick two and write about them. And I also felt sad for those students, and I'm sure there were some, who are not very interested in music and for who this will be yet another meaningless assignment that takes their time away from pursuing their passions. Another area of interest that was sparked through her passionate Harry Potter interest is languages. Many of the spells are based in Latin, and she spent quite a few months interested in that aspect. She would carry around the English-Latin dictionary she received for her birthday around that time, and immediately look up any spells or names she came across, and would often be rewarded with a little bit more insight into the story. She also worked the other way, thinking of prominent character traits for her story characters and translating those to Latin to come up with meaningful names. And she picked up more useful skills along the way, alphabetizing, pronunciation short forms, spelling. Excuse me. I remember that during this dictionary interest, I also showed her the oldest dictionary that we have at home. It's a Webster's 20th century dictionary published in 1956, which I got from my grandfather. It's so old and interesting looking, and almost 5 inches thick, and well over 2,000 pages long. We spent quite a bit of time exploring the tree diagram on the inside of the front cover, which shows the relationships and development of the Indo-European family of languages, seeing where Latin fits into the grand scheme of language development, and Middle English and Modern English. Even just reading the names of old and newer languages was so interesting for us. And when I was writing this and went to get the dictionary to check on the tree and the dimensions, it was busy pressing a flower for her, a rose she had received the week before at her cousin's bridal shower to celebrate her recent birthday. Books have many uses. Quite a few religion conversations have been sparked through Harry Potter. I'm sure you're not surprised by that. Book banning has been discussed, and we've critiqued the typical religious arguments against Harry Potter. She's also investigated the pagan tradition, comparing and contrasting it with modern religion, and many of the different types of divination, all interesting bits of information about the world around us. The Harry Potter movies have also given us many connections, many hours of discussion. She learned about the movie-making process by following their progress closely. We've talked at length about the screenplay adaptation process and the differences between telling a story in the different mediums, books and movies, what the visual element brings to the story in comparison to the relatively strict adherence to the main plot to accommodate the time restrictions of a movie. Both have their advantages and disadvantages. We've talked about the director's interpretation. With different directors now for the last three movies, including the one that's in production, it's really interesting to see how each of them handles the franchise, bringing their unique perspective. There are so many facets just in the adaptation of the books to movies that have helped us explore the story even more deeply. Not to mention all the new actors that we've met through these movies that we now connect to and seek out in other movies, which bring with them new stories, new ideas, and lots to discuss. Imagine, so much interesting learning sparked and flowing from the seemingly small topic of Harry Potter. Reading, writing, research skills, mythology, Latin, drama, computer graphics, web design, story analysis, religion, critical thinking, music, drama, and more. What a big world. I thought I'd share the connections map that I drew up for video games and Harry Potter when I was first thinking about this topic of learning through passions. I think I've managed to talk about most of the areas, but I thought you might enjoy seeing it laid out this way. But what it does when you see it is really bring home how connected all learning is, and how real learning, learning that is understood and remembered, happens best when the person has something meaningful to connect it to, or else it's just an isolated fact, without much meaning and soon forgotten. So, I've shared some of the wonderful and interesting places that exploring Joseph's and Alyssa's diverse interests have taken them. Are you still worried? Do you still think that your child's interest can't possibly take them to so many new and interesting places? Even if your child's interest is just one TV show, it can open up the world. How about The Simpsons? I could create another big set of learning connections just through our interest in that show, which started with Joseph but has grown to encompass the whole family in the last few years. A vast number of conversations and connections about songs, cultural influences, stereotypes, parenting, religion, comedy, history, classic literature, and so much more have been sparked just by The Simpsons. On one of our excursions to the local bookstore, Alyssa picked up the complete works of Edgar Allan Poe after having heard The Simpsons do their interpretation of The Raven. They watched the Reduced Shakespeare Company performing the complete works of Shakespeare abridged, paying particular attention to the Hamlet skit to see how closely it aligned with the Simpsons Hamlet skit. And it did. They have explored at various times being vegetarian, Buddhist, England, even learning itself through the running commentary of school on the show. We often make connections with the guest voice actors that regularly appear. Even J.K. Rowling has made an appearance on The Simpsons. That was an exciting night. It's a veritable spider's web of connections. My point is, instead of spending your time worrying about your child's passionate interest, that it's narrowing his view of the world too much, and trying to get him interested in other things, use that time and energy to delve deeply into the passion with him. Follow it, explore it. Turn it over. Play with it. Keep your mind open to all the possibilities and suspend judgment. Not only will you begin to see all the wonderful things that she's learning, your relationship will grow stronger as you share the joy that your child exudes while discovering all she wants to know about her most treasured interest. Whether it's trains, video games, collectible cards, Harry Potter, horses, or a TV show, I am certain that you'll be amazed with where the journey will take you. And you know what? After you've experienced the joy and the depth and breadth of learning through pursuing both passions and fleeting interests, you will not need to trust that your child is learning every day. You will know it. And once you're comfortable with that, you'll still want to stay deeply involved and connected with your kids and their interests because you'll know they're wonderful, amazing human beings who are lots of fun to hang around with and to know intimately. Thanks.
Thanks for listening. I hope you enjoyed this talk. You can check out the rest of the Tuck Talk series at livingjoyfully.ca/conference. If you're curious and want to learn more about unschooling, get started with my free Exploring Unschooling book at livingjoyfully.ca/exploringunschooling. If you'd like to connect with me, you can find me on Facebook at Living Joyfully. But most important, have fun living and learning with your family.